Brian, you know how to work the air conditioner. If it gets stuffy, I'll signal you, you'll turn it on. All you have to do is press one button. Yep, we're ready?
Yeah.
Okay. First of all, today is, I've been told always to give the date. Today is September the 18th, 2011. It is Sunday afternoon, and I want to say Shavuot Tov to all the wonderful students sitting in front of me, and also to the thousands across the expanse of the big world who are listening, which is a frightening responsibility for me. And I recognize many of you send me questions. I have them in front of me. I just have to apologize. I function here without any secretarial help. Basically, we only have one young lady who works part-time, and she's essentially a receptionist more than a secretary, so I apologize. Now, I'll answer some of the questions, but later I want to come into the shiur because I want to do something very different and special today. The problem we're dealing with is, of course, Makom Shenahagu. The problem of prayer, it hits all of us in the face. This past weekend I was away. I really go away when I have to teach on Sunday, but my part of my house is being painted, V'dailech Hakim B'Buramiza, and they're doing repair work out in the terrace, so it was very good to get away. But we were in a city which, if you know the Sibyan Gittin, it may very well be we were in Chutz Laretz, we were in Kesaria, and considering a Caesarea, Kesaria, whatever name you know it by, and considering the religious situation there, I felt I was in some small community in America, in Europe. It's unbelievable. It's one shul for basically the whole area. There are a few little minyanim, but nothing that counts. And in the supermarket, they sell, I don't even want to mention what they sell in a separate area. So, you know, a supermarket that can sell, let me not mention it, it's a frightening thought, Alat Mata Kodesh. Nevertheless, the shul is very interesting, and in the shul you have a tremendous problem because you have Eidot HaMizrach, Sfardim, Ashkenazim, and Hadi Yadavan. The rabbi there until this year, he was, it's a very sad story, in Caesarea they suddenly had no money to pay the rabbi, and he built the shul from the ground. He today, he's one of three great rabbis who have left Israel, and I shiver and shake because I'm a religious Zionist, that they have to end off their careers in the United States. One of them you know is from this Kollel, another one is Rabbi Azi Berzin, and a third one is Rabbi Dov Kaplan, who you don't know, a Hesda graduate, American origins, Kotel, and he's now in the, I'm told it's the wealthiest Orthodox congregation in all of Great Britain. And they saw him in action. He was a fabulous guy, and they grabbed him. Now, Dov, and many times he would consult with me, we go back many decades, and he fought in Sultan Yaakov. He came out of it alive, thank God. Those of you who know my connection to Sultan Yaakov understand why I mention that. Now, Dov instituted in the shul, and he had this tremendous problem. What does he do? Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, he has two separate minyanim. Why does he have separate minyanim Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur? Because then a lot of Jews who are not observant come. You understand what I'm saying? And he has to accommodate them. So Rosh Hashanah and Kippur, they literally have two separate buildings that belong to the shul. And one is Ashkenaz and one is Eidot HaMizrach. During the year, the minyan is not large. And for instance, Shabbos morning, I would say there were 30, 35 people there at most. Some of them were tourists. So the first part of davening is Eidot HaMizrach. From Yishtabach on, it's a mixture of Eidot HaMizrach and Nusach Sfarad. There's no real Ashkenaz davening. But as I explained to you, as all of you should know by your stage in learning, Nusach Sfarad is an Ashkenaz minhag. It's just the Hasidim who were rebellion. Listen to Rakepet Shurim on the Hasidic movement. The Hasidim who were in rebellion, you know, when you rebel, you have to wear a special hat, you have to daven in a special way, you have to show you're different. It's the whole concept behind uniforms. And I went to Bnei Akiva one time, I'm sitting in Rabbi Yosef Weiss's shir, and Bnei Akiva used to meet during the weekend on Shabbos. And I was wearing my B'nai Akiva uniform, but I didn't want, it was election day, so we were meeting early in the afternoon because we didn't have English. It's in high school, election day. And I didn't want Rabbi Yosef Weiss to see I'm wearing a B'nai Akiva shirt. He comes from Satma. So I was wearing a sweater on top of the shirt. So my chavruta sitting next to me, Michael Rackman, starts yelling, Rebbe, Rebbe, ask Roscoff to lift up his sweater. And then he called, then Rabbi Yosef Weiss called on me to read the Tosfot. But Baruch Hashem, I knew it, he didn't bother me. But all of you understand that Nusach is very important. Okay, Makom Shenagu certainly applies here. And Halakha L'maisa, we see that there are enough Mekilim that we cannot come down strong, particularly where there's a kibbutz galyot and you have people in Shtiblach together and the army together. So if you want to listen to Rakefet, come up with, every year there's a new prayer book. There's the Sachs prayer book now, it's conquered the world. And every year, every few years, there's a new prayer book. I would like a prayer book. I love an Ashkenaz, but there should be three different kedushas in it. Ashkenaz, Sfad, and Eidot HaMizrach. That's the prayer book I would like, okay? And you will understand what I'm saying. And this is what I showed you last week, that Rav Herzog already, and Rav Ovadia certainly, and I introduced you to Rabbi Benjamin Blau, allows a doctorate, and I'll come back to it. I want to review the book one day. I'll bring the book into class because it is a fascinating volume, and it's a beautiful doctorate. It's what Chachmat Yisrael is all about. In my new book, I have an entire chapter on Bernard Rebbe graduates. These are people who have said to me, I've gotten very nice compliments on that chapter that I explain what Chachmat Yisrael, where it's different than the yeshiva shir, and where the importance is in Chachmat Yisrael, if you wish, you want the air conditioning, I finally have a request. If you wish to go into Chachmat Yisrael after your Talmud Chacham, it certainly adds. And I have to tell you, the letter I reproduced from Rabbi Belkin to Rabbi Revel, it was a very cruel step on my part, and I deserve a patch, because Dr. Belkin, and I'll just give you some insight now, Reb Shmuel Belkin was schizophrenic. In other words, in a positive sense, he always remained the rotten yeshiva boy. And on the other hand, a minute later, he was president of Yeshiva University and had to deal with Einstein and with Albert Einstein in person, and had to deal with all that came up with the graduate schools. So there always was a dialectical tension in him. So when I uncovered his letter to Rabbi Revel, and I was going in Aliyah, and I knew my doctorate had already was under contract with JPS, I said, look, it's not nice if I publish letters from the Rav to Rabbi Revel and from Dr. Belkin to Rabbi Revel. These are my mentors. I have smicha from them. I have to ask their permission. So I go to the Rav, and Rebbe says to me, he looks at the letter, he says, what can I tell you? I wouldn't write a letter like this today, but I wrote it, Chatimat Yadayim Me'idolai Kameya Edim. Do what you want with it. He couldn't curl out of it, and I did publish part of the letter in English translation. Dr. Belkin says to me, you can use the idea, but don't do it as a formal letter. Let it get lost in the paragraph. In other words, he didn't want to be identified that he wrote a magnificent letter explaining Chachmat Yisrael. He was a Rabbi Yeshiva boy at that moment. So I figure 50 years later, I couldn't ask Dr. Belkin, obviously, and I'm not a Makubo. I mean, a Makubo would tell you, and up to heaven, and he asked Dr. Belkin, he got permission. I live in a different world, which is bad or good, I don't know. I'm not commenting. Could be I should tell you I went up to heaven and asked Rabbi Belkin and got his permission, but the letter is there. But be it as it may, it's a beautiful doctorate. And of course, Rabbi Ovadia Yosef certainly felt that you can change Nusach and you should daven Nusach, Eidot HaMizrach and Marat Yara, and certainly it's a Chiv of Dinitziv, Kaddish, Kedusha, you have to say according to your Nusach, but if you're davening for the Tzibur, you have to say their Nusach, and Halakha L'maisa, this is what I am no hate, I daven B'Havaras Svardit, and I medaber B'Havaras Svardit, and I mavarech B'Havaras Svardit, but I daven Nusach Ashkenaz. in a tzibur, if I'm davening for the Amid, I have to daven the Nusach publicly, and when I answer Kedusha, I have to answer the way they answer, and that's the Nitziv, it's been accepted halacha l'maisa. Now, this is in relation to tefillah, and this is a trend that has developed today, and it's part of the army, wherever we meet, wherever we interlock, and I saw it in Kisaria. I can only tell you with the Rav, and I don't know whether this is true or not, because, you know, when I tell a story about the Rav, when I'm an eyewitness, I can swear to it, as they say. But when I'm not an eyewitness, I'm repeating a story I heard, but it's a fascinating story. I heard it from people who swore to me it's true, but it's a story out of the 1980s. Stories out of the 1980s, I'm always hesitant to repeat, because there's a lot of remaking of the Rav. Did everyone sign in? Everyone in the room? Okay. So there's a lot of remaking of the Rav. So they tell me as follows, that they were davening one day in the Beis Medrash, you know, in YU, and the Rav was davening, and they could hear what he was saying. And suddenly they hear at Mincha that the Rav says, Sim Shalom. And they were shocked. So you're validating it. Now I can believe the story. Yitzchak grew up in Boston, so if he validates it, so they were not. She said Sim Shalom. So they went over to him in their minds, an Einiku from Reb Chaim Brisker. A man who's Kulo Ashkenaz, a man who's Kulo Brisk, a man who represents Lithuania. He's saying Sim Shalom at Mincha on a week that I say Sim Shalom Minig Hagra when there's Kriyat HaTorah at Mincha. If you know Minig Yerushalayim, it's Minig Hagra, so we say Sim Shalom Shabbos afternoon. But here, on a Wednesday afternoon, he's saying Sim Shalom. So a few guys went over to him, Rebbe, you want to ask Torah Hidlu Moda Nitzarech, quoting the Gemara in Brachat, you said Sim Shalom. He said, well, what's the question? I grew up in Chaslovich. You follow what he was answering? What was Chaslovich? A Chabad town, Nuslachari. So it shows you, even the Rav already made changes in the family Nusach. So once again, you have to come back to the Ari HaKodesh. There are 12 doors to HaKodesh Baruch Hu. Each door is correct. And for those who don't fit into any Shevet, there's the Shah HaKlali. And this is the approach that I think is the one we have to take in Israel. Hold on a second, Matan. You can't force it. In other words, Rav Gorin, and you have to, again, you have to understand this personality. Rav Gorin was just in the news. I don't know if you read the weekend papers, but what's happened with the women singing in the army. So in Makor Rishon, there was a very caustic polemic against the present chief rabbi of the IDF that he hasn't opened his mouth yet. And they compared him to Rav Gorin, who would have banged on the table and would have yelled and shouted and would have told the Minister of Defense, either fire those guys who threw out the cadets who wouldn't listen to Kalisha, or I'll have you removed from the government, you know. And Gorin, I'll politic, and he was good friends with BG and the leadership then, and Golder and the whole crowd, and he would have had the defense, would have had the defense minister put into jail, the chutzpah, Gorin. Gorin gave a bang. You don't know where Gorin was. When there was a problem in the kitchen, he got onto a helicopter, landed, and he was a general. And there was no one on the base that had his rank. The commander of base is generally a skanaluf, a lieutenant colonel. At the most on the base, you'll find an aluf mishner, a colonel. And Rav Gorin would walk, everyone would have the salute and kowtow, and he banged and did. So he, of course, wanted to force Nusach Achid. But life does not work that way. And I'm a little older than you, and I've had a lot of experience, unfortunately. I say unfortunately because I've seen so much in my life through my students, what goes on. And you can't force the issue. 100 years from now, we'll revisit this topic, and we'll see where we're at. But right now, You have to let each river, how did the Achronim put it, naha, each river has to go its own way. And water will seek its own level. Okay, so halacha lemaisa, this is in relation to prayer. But I'm ready now to go further. Yeah, yes, my time.
I was going to ask for
Nisan Kachid. What did you daven in the army?
Yeah,
you got that exactly. Nisan Kachid never caught on. It could never catch on because, as I've said, what does Nisan Kachid mean? You can be sure you won't know what the Nisan is till the Baal Tefillah opens his mouth. And by the way, it's the same thing in the Shtiblach. In the Shtiblach, I mean, I get stuck whenever it's Eidat HaMizrach with that Don Al Chayt at Mincha. It kills me. I don't have time to sin. I don't understand it. I mean, I don't know. My whole life is learning Torah. You see, I'm here. I start learning. I'm in Grus. I'm working on Shirim. I'm answering questions. I disappear from here. I go to my mother, Kibbutz Avdiyim. I come home. I'm learning. I collapse. I take a nap. I wake up. I'm learning. I'm running. I'm writing. I'm running to Mincha. God, I didn't have time to sin. But it's worse than that. I always say, because they're getting even with me. Because in yeshiva, I don't know the way it is in your time. In my time, we never daven Mincha properly. Ashrei, Ahecha Kedusha, and Aleinu. Who said that? And then I found out that was the Midigan Miriam. But there it was Mendaf Levinin. By the way, it's all wrong. It's a terrible approach. Now that I'm much more mature, I am totally opposed to what they did in Mir in the 20s and the 30s, and it impacted on me in the 50s with my Rebbeim. Davening is important. And you have to teach a young man how to daven. But with us, it was a rush job. The shiur was over. It's 5 minutes to three. Five after three, college begins. We got to get upstairs. So three after, or 10 after 3. Chap lap shmap bap. That was mincha. Then I grew older. I learned the Rambam that Nefilat Apayim. And Nefilat Apayim is part of the Shmon Esrei, right? A kiyum in Shmon Esrei. One of the 10 kiyum in Shmon Esrei. So now, all right, I have to say Tachman. I do admit when I daven in Boston and there's no Tachman, I have a big smile on my face. I am a bad boy at times. Yes, Michael.
But the only reason they do a Hechar Kedusha is because the statement that they make to the yeshiva boys, for example, Phil Yeshiva, is you shouldn't be wasting your time davening. That's the only reason.
I hate to say it, but that's the only reason I can come up with that. That learning is very important. We don't have time for a proper davening. And whenever I heard already, I don't want to mention, I heard in the name of a Gadol Shebegadolim, a Litvisha, that if you have to keep a chavruta, and because of that you can't daven mincha b'tzibur, keep the chavruta and don't daven mincha b'tzibur. Okay? I heard that from Michlalav, from one of the reliable sages there, in the name of a Gadol Shebegadolim. He claimed he asked them.
It's not a matter of time. I mean, they have all day, the guys live there. I mean, 5 more minutes is...
Yeah, I'm only telling you what, and in YU, there were a few Rebbeim. There was one Rebbe, Macy Gordon. He insisted there be a real Chazaras HaShatz. And he said, if the kids don't learn how to do Chazaras HaShatz, they will not know how to daven in shul. And he was the only Rebbe that I know of who was matpid on a proper Chazaras HaShatz. Macy Gordon. But what's his Hebrew name? Moshe Gordon? Anyone, you can correct me. He lives in Israel today, you see. It's not unknown. Although, see, it's a new generation. You mention Macy's name, everyone has a question mark. Who's the Rebbe talking about?
A Bostonian,
correct. Macy and Jimmy Zichrono Livracha. And Jimmy was in the original class when the Rebbe organized a post-high school Talmud class for kids who, there was no yeshiva, no high school. This is the 1930s, early 30s. He had just arrived in Boston. He organized a post-high school Talmud class. Who do you think taught it? Reb Shmuel Belkin. He was getting his doctorate then in Providence. He would go to Boston twice, 4 times a week to teach. You want to know more? It reveals the mindset, but you have to put yourself in 1933, 1934. You're not going to understand it sitting in the year 2012. You're not going to understand it in 2012. Rabbi Mori Rebbe, Rav Soloveitchik, insisted that Rav Shmuel has to teach in English. And the boys were all upset because, first of all, Dr. Belkin was not exactly an orator, not in Yiddish, and certainly not in English, number one. Number two, they grew up in the Yiddish-speaking homes. A Gemara darf man lernen in Yiddish, was? An agoyische Sprach, Gemara, das klingt nicht. I don't know how to translate that. It doesn't hit home. So Jimmy Gordon told me they went and complained to Rabbi Belkin. And Rabbi Belkin said, I would love to teach in Yiddish. It would be easier for me, but Rabbi Soloveitchik insists. And the next day, the Rav walks into the classroom. Is there anyone here who has a complaint that Rabbi Belkin is speaking English? And the guys were sitting there in a panic. No one opened their mouth. And from that point on, it was in English. And that reveals the Rav. If you'll hear my talk, if I have time to give the proper talk, because I don't know Tuesday night, I have to see how long we have two guest speakers. Assuming the country is standing, the world is standing, it turns out September 20th is September 20th, and if you're listening to the radio, your blood pressure is going to go up. So I would advise you to put cotton in your ears and mach sich nicht wissendig and just sit and learn. And don't worry about anything else. And there's nothing you can do anyway. You're not in the army. They didn't call you up, right? They called up a lot of reserves already. So it's nothing you can do. And I have a policy. If I can't do anything, that's what I pay taxes for. The politicians should take care of it. And if they don't take care of it, the Ribono Shel Olam, that's why I stop it. First the Hishtadlut, then the Bitachon, if you know Reb Yisrael Salantis Derech. Okay. So now let's go a step further. And here I refer you, this is a secondary source, and I just want to make mention of it because it's fascinating, and it introduces a concept that we're going to be working on in the weeks and months to come. It's, all of you know what Tchumim is, Tchumim. A drop of background. With the state of Israel, the state was formed, everyone was in a state of shock, no one knew what was happening. There was no time to think, no time to breathe. The Holocaust, the survivors who got here, the Jews running away from the Mela, from the Arab ghetto, and there was no time to prepare. And war, state, and then gradually a miracle happened and Torah resuscitated itself. I need not tell you how many questions came up, the army, the reparations, the rehabilitation of Jews, endless questions. And then technology expanded and technological questions came up. And two institutions dealt with technology in Torah. One is in Bayit Vegan, Rabbi Halperin. Machon Lev actually may be a sort of a shoot-off from Rabbi Halperin's institute. The other one, of course, grew up in the religious Zionist world that is Tzomet, headed by Rabbi Yisrael Rosen, who was my colleague in the Mechala. We taught together in the 70s. And they have come up, I need not tell you, the Grummer switch and all the patterns that you see in use today, such as cripples who can't walk, use a little scooter to get the shul on Shabbat. It works on a Grummer switch. There's no Isidio Reitman involved. There's a sign on it that it's on a Shabbos mode. And they come up with frigidaires and ovens and hot water urns, all with the Heksha from the Machon LeTechnologia, whatever it's called, Somit. I think it's called the Machon LeTechnologia. It's in the Gush. It's located in the Gush. It's a major institution. They've come up with jeeps, Grama jeeps. I once spoke about it in the class from the point of view of halakha, to use in areas where you haven't had a terrorist attack for 2, 3, 4 years. So you think maybe there's not real pikuach nefesh. Nevertheless, there's a slight chance. So they use these type of jeeps. Anyway, in addition to all that they do, the elevator, for instance, the automatic elevator in my building is a Tzomet automatic elevator, meaning the whole patent that works the automatic elevator is developed by Tzomet. It's very, very ingenious, so that if the time clock goes off while you're in the elevator, it still completes the next cycle. So you can get out without having, it's totally normal to go out as if it's a Shabbos elevator yet, and then it will go off at finally at the next floor after the time that it would usually stop there, then it will turn off. It's very, very ingeniously done. So they also put out a, it's a yearly called Tchumim, and it deals with all the modern problems of the state of Israel, technological and otherwise. It's a religious Zionist publication. In other words, you won't find, for the sake of argument, you won't find too many Panovitcher writing in Tchumim. But you will find Shas Talmidei Chachamim, and from the Yeshiva Hezda, and from the Bar Ilan Kollel. It attracts these type of people. Anyway, in Tchumim number 15, that's from 1995, there's an article on all about what we're going to go into now, inter-ethnic marriages. It begins on page 301 by Rav Avram Wasserman, a very fascinating article. What's most interesting about this article is it makes a point that we're going to come to very shortly, and we're going to be with it for many months to come. It's like a chakira. And let me explain the point he makes, and then we'll start rolling. You see, if it's Matam Shinahago, it has nothing to do with you. It's totally an objective concept. Meaning, let's take Yantav Sheni. If the Psak is correct that it has to do where you live permanently, that is your kehila, then no matter where you are, if your home address is Tinek, you have to observe 2 days Yantif. And you can't go and say, I'm a great Zionist, I'm a great religious Zionist, I intend to come in Aliyah within the next 49 years, I travel to Israel 2 times a year, I happen to be here for Pesach, I see Rabbi Reuben driving his car in Yantav Sheni, why can't I? No, it's not Shaykh. You understand? Makom Shenagu. You belong to a community that observes 2 days. And it's totally objective.
Even if the feet are in Eretz
Yisrael? I'm saying if you take the point of view of Makom Shenagu, what you're saying is there's another point of view. I pass him the other way. The other way is very simple. I mean, I paskin, the Rav paskins. I spoke with the Rav for hours on this topic. Rav Chaim paskin, the Chacham Tzvi paskin, the Chazal Mish paskin, Rav Ovadia paskins, Rav Kook paskins, the Rav Shmuel Solank paskins. There was a total rebellion against the Shulchan Aruch on this issue. There's another point of view. It has to do with your feet on. It's like a din Megillah, Megillah Esther. So there, it depends where you're standing. Again, it's very subjective, it's very objective, not subjective. For the sake of argument, Michael Weissman, Michael Weissman is standing in Israel, he's yelling, I'm a White Plains man, I'm a White Plains man, 2 days, baloney 2 days, where are your feet? It's like Kriyat Megillah, you understand? When I did basic training, I was in the army on Purim. My wife is in Israel. My children are in Jerusalem. I mean, my children are Jerusalem. My bank account is Jerusalem. My svarim are in Jerusalem. My second pair of tefillin are in Jerusalem. I don't mean Rabbi Otam. I mean, I have 2 pairs. I have a regular pair and a traveling pair. I don't want to get caught up now with Rabbi Otam. It's all I need because I saw this morning, I davened at Or Akiva, and I saw a Neidot HaMizrachai putting on Rabbi Otam. Now Rav Ovadia Tzadok encourages it, and I wanted to ask him, but it was a Chabad shul. I wanted to ask him, are you putting on B'torat Chabad or B'torat Eidot HaMizrach Rav Ovadia? You understand? But I figured I'm a guest there. He never saw me before. Who knows when he'll see me again. I'm going to go up and ask a question like this. Also, I have to be a London to understand what I'm asking. The guy may look at me, okay. Michael, you see, if it's a din where your feet are, the fact that you're up in White Plains ain't a maleh, the ain't a morit. Okay. Gentlemen, that's Mokum Shenahaku. But you see, with a wife and a husband, there's another factor. And here I have to say very sadly, and this also may come out Tuesday night if I have enough time, I prepared a talk that can either be 5 minutes or an hour and 5 minutes. I have to say very sadly, I'm not happy to go back to the United States again. I was there 3 times this past year. The amount of divorce, enmity, hatred, animosity I saw with my students, I cry. Some of them, graduates of this very color. I'm not so happy with the color. We didn't win them all. I like to win. I'm a Yankee fan. I like to win. We didn't win them all. Just had the shock of my life. I go up to Toronto, everyone's talking about my problem with a divorce. I guess another time he didn't swear, but he promised me this week he'll finally give the get. I told him, you can't win. You can't win. You're going to hold up a get after you reach the civil divorce? You're making a fool out of yourself and you're destroying the halacha. You're making a chilul Hashem. But you see, when you get married, Moshe Schwartz, Moshe, Turo, Baltimore. I don't know if you know Moshe, but I have deep ties to Turo. There are reasons why. I'll tell you, but not now. Moshe, are you married? You see, marriage, what marriage involves is consideration. You have to have feeling. I'll tell you what our problem is. Let me tell you a little story. Let me give you a little drish now. The true story, it happened in the Kollel. A very prominent Rosh Yeshiva's daughter got married here. She lives here. And under the chuppah, she refused to walk around the chatan. How many of you are married? Let me see. Do your wife walk around 7 times? Okay, but I'm not asking Ephraim. There, with your case, I know she did. She's Izan Elacha, Baruch Hashem. She walked around. Ashrein l'shezachim. I just was Masada Kedushin a week ago or 2 weeks ago today, and I had my doubts what's going to happen. Miraculously, she walked around. Oh, she's a bit of a feminist.
This is a
minhag, not a halacha. Yitzchak, let me handle it my way. Minhag, not a halacha. God, you're going to be blown away by my talk on a Tuesday night. Back here. So she refused to walk around. And this is a very prominent Rosh Yeshiva. So the boys in the kollel asked him, Mahai, what happened? Some of them were talmidim in New York. He said, feminism. Feminism. So the boys said to me, Rebbe, how would you handle it if the kala refused to walk around? So my shalom, let me tell you what I did. I said, on the spot, I said, okay, I would make a little speech. Ladies and gentlemen, we're about to once again reenact an ancient ritual of the kala walking around the chatan. Do you know why the kala walks around the chatan? Because one of the great faults of yeshiva education is that we have adopted the Slabodka approach of Gadlut HaAdam. We make every student feel important, great, unique, Bishvili Nivra Olam. Moshe, did you learn in Slabodka with the Alta? I did. I heard a Shmuisen, 1900, 1890. I was influenced. That's a wonderful trait when it comes to Shmirat HaMitzvah and learning Torah. It is a horrendous trait to bring into marriage. And therefore, under the chuppah, we want to remind this young man, there is now someone walking around you, reminding you, you are no longer alone. You can only be self-centered. You can no longer only be concerned with your ego. you will soon have a wife. She has to become the apple of your eye. Now, whenever you think and act and do, you must consider her before you consider yourself. And you know why she circles seven times? Because if you remain self-centered, it's to remind you, Hevel Havalim, Sefer Kohelet, seven times the word vanity. Chas v'chalima, your life should be filled with vanity and your spirituality should be in vain. And let us proceed with this hallowed custom of the kala reminding the chatan his status is now changing. Gentlemen, I don't want to tell you that the boys were in tears and they said, Rebbe, you are the biggest ganav in the world, but you just pulled on us. But that's the way, even Yitzchak is smiling. Baruch Hashem, even Yitzchak is smiling. Matan.
How would you hold that double warning around,
The girl is not self-centered to begin with. A woman's life is different. But anyway, you want to know something? Hashem Yerachem, where we're at, this is ridiculous. What you're saying is men and women are exactly the same. And you see what's happened, though.
That's what they do.
You see, it's double ring ceremony, you understand?
Walking around ceremony.
Walking around. So, okay, I raise my hands. But minhag is minhag, and mesorah is mesorah. But at times we have to be apologetic and make it meaningful in the context of today's society. Look, I had a good Rebbe, and when the Rebbe testified in Mount Clemens, you remember that testimony. It was epic making, philosophical, theological, but right down to earth. A man is a man and a woman is a woman. And I've used it many times. It has saved me from embarrassing moments.
With double ring ceremony, there are serious halakhic problems.
Right, right. I understand. I will agree with you. I will agree with you. But tradition, the minute you start making a hole, you know, cutting away, you cut 1 inch, the next generation cuts 2 inches, 10 generations later, the cloth is gone. Okay, anyway, not important. What is important is, you see, with Shalom Bayit already, this is much more subjective. And it could be when you come to the question of husband-wife, it's not purely makom shenahagu, but there's so many subjective factors. Matan, we want them to work out a happy marriage. How can you have under one roof two totally different minhagim? Now, you can ask, but look, I was brought up a certain way. I have a certain minhag. This is our Kabbalah. This is our Mesorah. But for the sake of Shalom Bayis, perhaps we can abolish a minhag, abolish a Mesorah. Perhaps we can compromise and reach out. And I want to show you two amazing sources. One, a source that you should all know, and one, a source that perhaps I will open up to you in a few minutes. Whenever a couple gets engaged, I always say to them, I think I said it to you, Ephraim, as well, look up the Rambam, Hilchat Ishut, Perek Tetvav, Halachat Yutet, and Chav. The Rambam here is Meiridik. It's not, by the way, Yoni, it's not that the Rambam discovered all these concepts. He's quoting the Maariz. I mean, for every word in the Rambam, you can find the source. Moshe Raps. You're a Machon Lev graduate, and you're in the Smicha program. And 1 second, Raps, how do you relate? I taught, there was a Rabbi Raps who taught me in the 60s. Great uncle, and then I taught his daughters, I believe, here in Machon Gold. Do you have cousins living here?
Yeah, but I don't think it's them.
What's their first name? All right, Sara Raps mean anything? That's the name that comes to me. Okay, say that. I should have good credit with your family. And now I want to say something. Before I read the Rambam to you, I want to talk about psychology. A world has been written on psychology. Men are from Mars, women are from Venus, if I'm quoting it correct. That's a popular statement, Moshe. And, you know, everyone agrees the personality of a man and woman is very different. And when you take a father and mother, and the Rav, you should know, on the first yard fight of the Rebbetzin, of Rebbetzin Tanya, the Rav gave a lecture at, it was originally planned for Stern College. I think what happened was so many people said they were coming that the administration of Yeshiva University pleaded with the Rav to switch it to Lampert Auditorium because they were frightened that the Stern College Auditorium would be a fire hazard. I think I spoke in Stern College. I think the auditorium can hold like 700. And Lamport can hold on to, I think it's 16, 1700. So you understand why it was switched. But it was geared for women. That talk appears in Family Redeemed. It is a fabulous talk on the difference between a man and a woman. And I just want to say a few words. I can't go into all the great Torah of the talk, but what is the heart of the difference? A woman doesn't want to be pushed aside, pushed away. I'll explain myself in a moment. A man doesn't want to be canceled, negated, abrogated. Let me explain myself. A mother is a mother. It's a beautiful instinct. Without that instinct, we wouldn't be sitting here. I've often said that now that there's this big attack on Shaloa Sana Yisha, again, by graduates of this very kollel. Without going into why we say Shalom Sana Yisha, which is a shir in halacha, the Gemara and Menacha, the reasons, mitzvah. If men had to give birth, we wouldn't be sitting here. Baruch Hashem, Shalom Sana Yisha. But women, that mother instinct, chava, the he ain kol chai, a mother remains a mother. This is why a mother-in-law and a daughter-in-law, you all know the Mishnah in Yavama, they don't have to, you're learning Yavama this year, Chazakah, they don't get along. Why don't they get along? Because a strange woman came along and robbed her son from her. And it's subconscious. A mother never wants to be pushed away. You can be 40 or 50 or 60 or 70 and you have a mother. She wants acknowledgement. You have to call her, Rabbi Lamb. His mother used to say, every day he calls me. It's president of the Yeshiva, as busy as can be. Mother's a mother. You should see the Rav, the way he honored Rebbetzin Pesha, his mother. It's a mother, that's the instinct. That's the he ain kol chai. The love, the child. The mother always remembers the Rav told one story. I talk about this in my new book, why I have this story and Family Redeemed doesn't have it. It's very fascinating. But the Rav said this in 68, that when his wife would show him pictures of the children, his little children, when you all grow up, you're men already. My grandsons are older than I am already. God, I remember them as little kids. Wow. They all were, a mother looks at the picture and she could tell the Rav. Rebbe said she could tell me exactly where the picture was taken, where she bought the dresses, what the event was. And the Rav said, when I looked at the picture, all I saw was a distant relic of the past. That's a mother. A father, he doesn't have that relationship with his children. He's basically, if there is a relationship, he's a teacher. But a father, a man, he feels, oh, I'm a man. I'm right. Don't criticize me. Don't abrogate my words. Don't negate what I'm saying. Father gets upset. There's a big difference in personality. And you have to understand this. And this is why the Rambam and these two halachot is so glorious. V'chein tzivo chachomim she'yadom ha'chabed et ishto yotem igufo, ba'avok igufo, v'yim yesh lo momen marbe betovata kafim amano, v'lo yatil ole eima yutei rabi yediburai ima b'nachat, v'lo ye'atzur v'ratzan. A wife has to treat her with kindness. She needs acknowledgement, not just from children, from husbands. My wife always, when I was in the rabbinate, and I was your age, and I was busy changing the world. Moshe, you got to change the world from schwarz to weiss, black to white. I wanted every Jew in America to be a Shomer Shabbos. And in Caesarea, over Shabbos, I met a couple that I married more than 40 years ago. She was from my kehillah in Maplewoods. I told her about my new book. Her mother is 92. She says she's in perfect health. I said, tell her to get the book and bring it to shul. I want to know if anyone remembers that I was the rabbi who built that shul from the ground. First rabbi, first Orthodox shul. 50 years later, who remembers? Who cares? It's ancient history. That's life. I'm curious. But a woman, she has to feel wanted. When I was busy in the rabbinate, my wife would call me and with a different voice, try to make an appointment to see me. Got it, Matan? It's a simple message there. We're busy. We're changing the world. But that's a woman's personality. It works that way with children, works that way with a husband, and we have to understand it, we have to respect it, we have to live with it. Then you have halacha chav. V'chein tziva l'isha she'tiyah mechabedet et bala b'yotem idai. Oh, v'yiyah b'einecha k'molsar o'melech. Mahalechet v'tavot libo. U'merachechet kol ma she'yisna. And there's a lot of truth to that. You know, the proverbial image that the man comes home and the wife brings him the slippers. Honey, you had a hard day today. Relax. Can I get you a cup of coffee? There's so much truth to that. Now, I know today both the husbands and wives work. It's a little bit different. But nevertheless, the words of the Rambam, and Ksar Omelech. Yes, honey. The truth is, I have to be honest with you, the women control the men. There is no two ways about that. If you saw my Rebbe's relationship with his wife, and you saw Rebbe Moshe Feinstein's relationship with his wife, Gedolei Yisrael, Rebbe Shlomo Zalman Orbach's relationship with his wife, the women are the bosses. The women have common sense. The women have seichel. What does the Gemara say in Nida? Bina yetei rav b'nashim. But you have to make the man, my husband, king, lord, prince, psychological. It's what he needs, You all know the story in Borough Park of this shidduch, and they set up this girl with this young man, you know, a yeshiva boy, and they go out once, they go out twice, well, Borough Park, the third date already is decisive. So they come back to the house, and the father-in-law-to-be calls the young man in. Let's step into the kitchen. We'll close the door. I want to speak with you. And the mother and the girl are sitting in the living room, biting their nails. What will be? And the father comes out beaming. And the mother says, what happened? He says, mazel tov, mazel tov. I've never been called God so many times. He asked the boy, what are your plans? God will worry. How will you support my daughter? God will worry. How will you take care of my daughter? The Ribbono Shel Olam that Geben and Eitza. Oh my, he said, to be called the Ribbono Shel Olam time after time, this is the boy for our family. Now, in that little joke, there's a lot of truth. You see, because that's a male ego. Now, I have to apologize. I have to tell you, I have to be honest with you, those of you who get to know me, I'm not like that. But there's a reason why I'm not like that. I write about it in the book. In my first Rabbinate, I had a lot of difficulty. I was younger than you are. I was 23 years old. Had a lot of difficulty. A hotshot out of the yeshiva, Talmud of the Rav. I rubbed shoulders with the Rav, with Rabbi Belkin, with the Mashgiach, with the Tzuvalka. You understand? Oh, I had the chveis. I graduated college number one in my class. In a class of 87, I was number one, 3.97 something, if I recall correctly. Summa cum laude. I only got that. That's the difference. And I had two masters already. And at 23, I had two masters and smicha, and another smicha. And I got killed in my first position. It could have been critical, but I had seen what my madrich from Bnei Akiva, Meir Gahana, went through, Shem Yikom Damo, and I said, I can't let this ruin me. But one thing happened to me. I lost my ego, and Baruch Hashem, I'm not exactly a male image in that respect. And I apologize to you. Learn from others how to be a male image. Do not learn from me. But it's very important to understand the difference. And this Rambam, he ends off, V'zeh derech benot Yisrael u'b'nei Yisrael ha-kadoshim v'ha-tahorim b'zivugam u'b'drachim elu. Michael, I don't know of another Rambam that is so potent and so vital and so important for us today. And Ein Hachinami, this is the human being. We marry. We're in love. What goes wrong 10, 20, sometimes 2 years later, 30 years later? Yeah, if I would start to tell you my experiences with my students, what I've been caught up with, what I have seen, I don't know. I don't want to give a mazel tov anymore. 49 years from now, come and if you're still married happily, I'll say mazel tov. Why should I waste my breath? So you see, with a couple and an interethnic marriage, we're dealing with a lot more than just makom shenahaku. You're dealing with shalom bayit. You're dealing, and remember, children. Children are influenced. I told Dorf I was so angry when I got back from Toronto, and then what happened to me Monday morning, don't ask, in the middle of Irene, a student came to see me, got the first plane out of Florida, went to Atlantic City. So he came to see me, and you have no idea, I told him I'm dominating in Borough Park in the Shtibel, 6:30 Monday morning, 6:27, I was there 6:25, 6:27, he's next to me. He flew into Atlantic City, his brother picked him up, he slept in Woodmere, so he took me out for breakfast and burdened himself, and I tried to help him. But I want to tell you, in these cases, I've said to the woman, to the man, you have little children involved. So I inevitably get a simple answer. This lady said to me, and she's from and 100% a rabbi's daughter, the therapist said to me, I'm also a person. And I want to tell you, I called a Talmud of mine who's a therapist, and I let him have it. I had to call him and apologize. I said to Melisa's Rebbe, I didn't get offended. I understand what you're saying. I said, I'm just letting off steam. But you know, you therapists, whenever a kid complains about his parents and Freud and everything, you tell him, tell your parents off. Why don't you tell him? Your parents mean for your good. They may have been wrong. It doesn't matter. They're from a different generation. But you have to know, I don't know any parent that tried to harm a child. I mean, there are shagayim in the world. I'm talking about the rove by far. They're always on mishugayim. You know what happened in Brooklyn. You know what happened in Netiva. Mishugayim, murderers from Jews, murderers. Chop up a little kid, put him in the freezer. It's beyond words. You kill your Rebbe? It's beyond words. But that's a miyad shena nika. But parents should harm a kid? You have little children. No one has to be born. You have responsibility. I saw the results. I stopped collegiate teaching 10 years ago. One reason was to write the new book. But another reason was I couldn't take all the divorce, a third of the classes. The kids are from kids, divorced homes, with all that implies. Shalom bayis is crucial. Now I want to introduce you to Rav Moshe Feinstein. And this tshuva it recaptures an era. And here you have to understand, the world changes so rapidly today. There was a very famous refusnik in Russia, whom the Mossad books will now be written, and he will star in them. I know this as a fact. The archives of the Mossad are being opened. This man didn't know what was happening here, who was sending who, but one thing he knew over the years, millions of dollars went through his hands to get good lawyers for the Asir Tzion, to get kosher food, to buy gifts, to give it to jailers, to smuggle in the kosher food for them, etc., etc. His name is Yuli Khashevsky. I don't know if you know the name. He got out in 1989. So Yuli Khashevsky was just interviewed. And after he describes and tells the story, they ask him, Yuli, you have a son who was born in Israel, right after they came. What does your son know about all that you went through? And you know what he answered? Nothing. And that's the amazing part of life. Time marches on. It's like the 1960s. We knew nothing about the Holocaust. They first started to talk about it and to write memoirs. The 70s into the 80s, there was an explosion. But it's normal. It's good. The kid grew up here. He has to grow up a normal, happy Israeli kid. What his father and mother went through was a different story. Gentlemen, here's a tshuva that says it all. Igrot Moshe, Ode Chaim. It's the first Ode Chaim of the Igrot Moshe. Siman Nun Aleph. The tshuva was written in 1932. This is at the height of communism. And what was the shaila? The communists were totally against religion. Why they were against religion, again, everything I mentioned would take me hours to explain, but the Rav often said they didn't have to be against religion. Why were they against religion? Nesanel Fishman, I just want to see all the names today. Nesanel. You don't relate by any chance to Rav Chenech Fishman?
Not that I know of.
Rav Tzvi, no, you have said him. Nesanel Fishman. Nesanel. Why the communists were against religion? You could have had a communist system like in Israel. You see these youth demonstrating. So when I'm walking to Marib up the block, sometimes I come up the block from my house, so they're demonstrating outside Bibi's residence. It's not where he lives now because he has the official residence, but his private residence is around the corner from me. So what are they demonstrating for? Free housing. No, they're right. If I was a chutzpahnik, I would tell them, go to communist China or go to communist Cuba and you'll have free housing. I don't know, I saw what free housing was in Russia, Bakasha. But they're right, there's a government owes its people food, shelter, and clothing. Fine, you've all studied anthropology. Fine. Why do you have to be anti-religious? But somehow that was built into the communist system, that religion is the opium of the masses and we have to get rid of it. And they wiped out, killed rabbis, priests. By the way, this was not anti-Semitic, it was anti-religious. Stalin in the 30s, how many were executed? It's beyond words. He killed more than Hitler, actually. But he killed, most of what he killed were his own people. Yes, yes, William?
I think, to explain the terrible feeling against religion, specifically in the Catholic religion, you could have a concordat with the dictators of South America, and you tell a person, now you have to render
the Caesar what is Caesar's, right?
Because the most important is the next life.
Right.
You'll never have in Judaism such a view. No. But this is a basic Christian doctrine.
Right.
That the next life is the most important.
But why were Lenin and Stalin so anti-religion altogether?
Because religion did not deal with this world. It's not like the world is in a
world. You're saying, so why is it against Judaism? We're not anti this world. Okay.
Because it all started with us.
Okay. I hear. Say that, whatever it is, the Rav, I have it in my book on the Rav, where I quote the Rav, where the Rav said that didn't have to be this way, but this was the reality. So they shut down all the shuls and all the churches. But still there were people who wanted to go to church, wanted to go to shul. So what they did in every community, and I'm using communist terminology now, they left one functioning synagogue and one functioning church. And they were very smart, because the church and the synagogue were under the control of the KGB. Agents were there. I saw KGB, nice Jewish people, who were KGB agents, for whatever the reason was, essentially to have a little bit money, to have a little bit food, they sold their souls. So they allowed one functioning synagogue. It was like a safety valve. You want to go worship? Go worship. Gentlemen, Reb Moshe gets the following shaila. In this community, there is one synagogue. The mikveh was shut down. They want to build the mikveh in the women's section of the synagogue. Now, in other words, this synagogue is owned by the Jews. It's owned by the community. They have no other place to build. There's no place they can buy. This is a communist system. Everything is owned by the government. There's no way they're going to get permission to build the mikveh. Now you just think what a mikveh means. A mikveh is a mikveh. Where in a shul with an Aron Kodesh in front, women are going to disrobe and walk around in the nude. In a shul. And this is the shaila, Daniel Lowenstein. Moshe Lester, Shmuel Kirshner, we know each other, and this is Chaim Bashir. Okay, is there anyone else who should be on the list? I see other faces here. You're here. You're in the class. Please pass this to him. And you're a guest, or you?
I don't know.
You don't know. Okay, so when you decide, you'll ask me. I don't want to waste computer strength on learning names if I'll see you once in a yovel. You follow?
My name is Orbach.
Abraham Orbach. What's your first name?
Abraham Yehuda.
My doctor is Abraham Orbach.
My father's Levi Yitzchak.
Your father was our student in the Kollel. Your father, what are you talking about? I taught with your grandfather in, Baruch Haba. Wow. Lady Orbach, son. Avi Orbach. Okay, got it. Chaim Dash. Okay, come back here. Do you understand this shaila? I mean, it's unbelievable. Now, how would you paskin if this shaila came to you in Jerusalem, if this shaila came to you in New York, if this shaila came to you in Boston, if this shaila came to you in Toronto, you'd throw the person out. What are you, an idiot? In a shul with an Aron Kodesh, women are going to walk around nude? What are we talking about? And I want you to know it's a beautiful, beautiful tshuva of Reb Moshe. And he's matir to build the mikveh in the shul. And he explains himself that, first of all, he gets involved halachically. How can you sell a shul? Those of you who have learned the Gemara and Megillah, remember this entire sugya. Thank you. You're with me, brother, okay? There's an entire sugya in the Gemara and Megillah dealing with selling a shul, the Zayin Tuvei Ha'ir, which is more important, a shul or a mikveh? Which comes first? No question about it, a mikveh comes first. Without a mikveh, we can't have Jewish life. God have mercy, when you don't have a mikveh, you don't know what the Balei Tshuva were, mice and nefesh in Russia. They flew from Vilna to Moscow to go to mikveh. You have any idea what we're talking about? People were mice and nefesh. It's the final parak. It's one figure after another, with Zayin Tuvei Ha'ir, with Kedushat Beit HaKnesset. And this, you know where you find this going? All the shaylas in America with selling shuls and rundown areas to churches. How do you do it? Can you do it? Who are the Zayin Tuvei Ha'ir? Now, under a communist system, how do you get Zayin Tuvei Ha'ir? Who owns the property? Who can make decisions? And above all, a synagogue, which is not a private synagogue. This is a synagogue for an entire city. How can you get the people together? How can you get elected officials? Everything is underground. But Rav Moshe says, and I believe correctly, that there isn't a Torah Jew in the world who would be opposed to selling the back of the synagogue for the sake of building a mikveh, because without a mikveh, marital life cannot continue. Children cannot be born. If chas v'chalila, they do continue, it's terrible isurei karet. And Reb Moshe says, as far as worrying about the Zayin Tuvei Ha'ir, as far as worrying about selling the mikveh, selling it and getting approval, he says, chas v'chalila, that should be a factor here. And he quotes the Torah, the Pasha of Sota. What's the heart of the Pasha of Sota? What? Because I'll tell you, an entire Masechet Sota, that God permitted us to erase his name. They blot out the Megillah that you write for the Sota in order to create Shalom ben Ish l'Ishto, right or wrong. And he says, Hamatzinu gedola mizeh, where shehitiru Torah l'mchot shmo ha-gadol shenichtav v'kedusha, shehu yokeh zilzul v'kvot Hashem, v'hu isur d'oraita, kedei la'asot shalom ben ish l'ishto. We permit the blotting out. You all know the ceremony of Sota, so that the man should no longer suspect his wife and make peace with her and accept her. And we permit that. V'gam omedet bi'azara b'rosh parua v'leiv megula, I should say. You all know with the Sota, the v'par tosha. It's one of the sources why a married woman has to cover her hair. Am I right or wrong? Because if you have a sota, you have to take off her tichel, you have to uncover her hair, you have to embarrass her. And yet we do this all to let a husband and wife live together. V'yim ken kol shekein sheyesh lumot mizeh shemutal lezalzel v'kedushat beit ha'knesset lasot mikveh shehu gam kein lasot shalom ben ish li ishto v'nosap lezeh lesalek miniyat piriya v'rivya v'hasarat ha'kala lo rak le'echad ela l'kahal gadol. If you're allowed to blot out God's name, and if you're allowed to let the woman stand with her head uncovered, and all that to create shalom beinishli ishtamu. Allah kama v'kama kedushat beit knesset, which is less than kedushat Hashem, it's less than the kedusha of a scroll, it's less than kedusha of a sefer Torah. Allah kama v'kama and peer of your rivia and mahasiyat takala. I don't have to tell you. You all understand. Sex is a tremendous drive, and I don't have to tell you what the percentages would be of many people would transgress if the woman had no possibility of going to mikvah. And with all this in mind, we're not just dealing with Yechidim Chayim, we're dealing here with an entire kehillah. What a tshuva this is. There's so much that we can learn from this tshuva. And by the way, it goes into a very long analysis of the Gemara in Megillah. You'll see Reb Moshe Kedako Bakodesh, and he says, if you're allowed to sell a shul in order to support Talmidim, they should learn for Pidyon Shvuyim to marry a wife. Kol Shekein, you're allowed to sell a shul to build a mikvah when you have no choice. And he says, certainly under these conditions, we can assume everyone agrees, and we don't have to have Zayin Tuvei Ha'ir, B'maymet Kol Ha'ir. This is impossible under the communists, but we can make the assumption that absolutely everyone will agree. And this is what Rav Moshe Paskins, 5 years before he is rescued and gets to the United States, lahalacha ulamaisa, he's matir. Now you learn so much from this tshuva. Number one, you see the conditions Jews lived under the communists. And ein hachinami, I can say, eidut nemana, in Moscow, the mikveh was in the shul. In Leningrad, the mikveh, Leningrad today, of course, you know what that's in, as Petersburg. I don't think they changed it back to St. Petersburg. I think it's Petersburg. You can correct me if I'm wrong. Leningrad, the mikveh was in the shul. That I can say, Eidut Ne'mana. In Vilna, the mikveh, later they build the mikveh in the shul. That was one of the great achievements already in the mid-80s, that the Balei Tshuva from Vilna did not have to fly to Moscow. It was a tremendous trip, 2 days involved, money involved, and they had a mikveh. But we see something else, not just the communists. You see that even under the communists, people observed. There was the light, the nair, that refused to be extinguished. And this is something that is miraculous. I have a whole drasha from the Rav in my second volume on Rebbe, Al Amcha Beit Yisrael. And the Rav talks about this mystical feeling that a Jew has. He's part of Am Yisrael. There's continuity. He's not just an individual. And with all the communist teachings and with all the lack of Torah, this continued. And I have to, you know, be honest with you, Chabad deserves all the credit in the world, because throughout all the dark ages in Russia, there always was a Chabad presence, there always was a Chabad continuity, there always was a Chabad Mesirat Nefesh for Torah, for Mikvah, for Taret Mishpacha, for Kashrut. It's unbelievable under these conditions. Ultimately, in the overall Jewish community, by the 1960s, after so many years of no Torah education, there were practically no observant Jews whatsoever. The only Shomer Shabbos Jews were linked to Chabad. I can tell you, Eidut Ne'mana, in Leningrad, there was one family that never was Mechalel Shabbos, the Fratkin family. And they were Chabad origins. But with 67 and the Six-Day War and all that happened, it woke up the Jews. And then the miracle begins. And I often say, had the Russians let all the Jews out when they wanted to go, they would have all come to Israel, would have become very fine Israelis, like Golda Meir, like Yitzhak Rabin, like all the other leaders of the Jews here, without Shabbat, without Kashrut, with a nebulous attachment to Dine Minhagei Mesoret Yisrael. But then they started creating refuseniks, Sirovnikim. And then when you're in refusal, you start to ask, why am I here? Why am I suffering? And then many of them, Amir Tanikar, found their way to Torah. And this is one of the greatest miracles of modern times. And Moshe's tshuva, it's like a picture, a photograph. You capture an era. Now, how could Reb Moshe function? How could he be Rav? But you see, even with the communists, Jews got ahead, Jews were communists, but many still retained a Jewish heart. And Reb Moshe was Reb Moshe. They may have been communists, they may have eaten on Yom Kippur, but they loved him. They respected him. He was never arrested. His family in the States worked very hard. He had brothers-in-law, family here. The Rebbetzin had brothers-in-law, sister here. They worked very hard to get Reb Moshe out. And in 37, they succeeded. And Reb Moshe came to America, I believe at the time, I think three children, the two daughters and Reb David were born already. And Reb Reuven, I believe, was born in the United States. I'm pretty certain. You can correct me if I'm wrong, but if I'm not mistaken, Reb Reuven is slightly younger than I am. And I know that Reb Moshe arrived in America the year that I was born. Okay, let me just go one step further about Russia. Just, if everything works out, Tuesday night, you should understand who Reb Yosef HaTzadik Mendelovich is. Again, time is much done. I have buttons that we wore in the 70s. Free Yosef Mendelovich. Yosef HaTzadik grew up in Riga. He was younger than you when he became part of a plot in 1970 to rob a plane, land in, I believe they wanted to go to Finland, and in Finland, they would get out of the plane and catch up with the Israeli embassy and get on the plane for Israel. And they were going to hijack this plane. It was a group of about 10, 11 people. And of course, the KGB had informers. They knew all about it. And they were arrested at the airport. I believe it was in Leningrad. Two people were sentenced to death. Yosef was sentenced to 15 years. In jail. There was a tremendous demonstration in Yerushalayim. I remember marching from Kikar Menorah, which today is called Kikar Hasus, to the Kotel HaMaravi. It was Hanukkah 1970. And at the Kotel, while we were saying Tehillim, the news came through that the death sentences were commuted to 15 years in jail, and Yosef was commuted to 12 years. Okay, he's in jail now, and all over the world, people started to learn about him. He refused to eat treif. He refused to work on Shabbos. He didn't know much, but his commitment was beyond words. Finally, 1981, almost his full sentence having been served, I have to give credit to Edgar Bronfman, who was far from being a religious Jew or understanding what Torah is about, but he had an assistant, Israel, a singer, Israel singer, Mismach of Teira Vadas, and Dr. Singer influenced him in one of his dealings with the Russians. I don't have to tell you a financial dealing. He made a condition that Mendelovich has to be released. And it was a Thursday, and I remember that Thursday morning, the Israeli radio announced that Yosef Mendelovich is missing. He's not in jail, not in labor camp. And then they announced he has just arrived in Austria, and he's flying to Israel on Mr. Bronfman's private plane. He arrives at the airport Thursday evening. Now just think what I'm telling you. Here is a person coming out of a Soviet prison after 11 years. Here is a person who had no formal Torah education, just the little that he could pick up growing up in Riga. And at the airport, the TV crews are waiting to interview him and video him. And Yosef asks them, when will this movie, when will you show it, and what news? And they tell him, well, it's too late to make the news tonight. We will show it Friday night. And Yosef HaTzadik, it was during the winter, Yosef HaTzadik says, I cannot be interviewed if this will be shown on Shabbat. Do I have to say anything further? Comes out of the airport. I can't go further because I'll break down and cry, but I just want to tell you, comes out of the airport and he says he wants to walk to Jerusalem. He said he dreamt about this since the time he was 13 years old. And people told him, look, on a map, it looks very close to walk to Jerusalem. First of all, you're not in good health. Secondly, it'll take 4 or 5 days. So they implored him, you know what? At the outskirts of Jerusalem, we will let you off. And they drove to Yerushalayim Mir HaKodesh. I can show you exactly where they let him off. It's where the Sakharov Memorial is, if you know the entrance to the city, where you turn off to go to Har Nof, I believe it is. You turn off the highway, that's where they let him off. And from there, he started walking towards the Kotel. And the Israeli radio was broadcasting every street where Yosef was. And as he came closer, hundreds joined him, thousands joined him. He finally reached the Kotel. It was, I would say, midnight. There had to be 50,000 people at the Kotel. I, my wife, my children were among them. And if there ever was a night to remember Ke'ein Olam Haba, it was the night that Yosef HaTzadik arrived on Admat HaKodesh. So you see, Rav Moshe's tshuva opens a world of Mesirat Nefesh that, thank God, Eliyahu, growing up in West Hartford, you never had to experience it. Right or wrong, Baruch Hashem, who is your rabbi in West Hartford? I had Talmidim there. Who was there? Danny Cohn was there, right? Okay, Danny Cohn, and I had, I think, other Talmidim there as well. And then Baruch Hashem, what a story. Now, there's no question that when it comes to one house, a husband and a wife, you have to have shalom bayit. You have to have a modus vivendi that they should be able to live in peace and in shalom. Now, let me just end off before, we're going to go into a lot of response to literature, very fascinating response to literature. But I want to raise one simple question. Your gut reaction. Who has to give in to who? How would you view this? How do you deal with it? And now think for a moment. You're an Ashkenazi. All your life you have not eaten rice or beans on Pesach. Your wife says her greatest joy is eating rice on Pesach. I sat with the Eidot HaMizrach. My wife wasn't there. I enjoy the garinim. My wife goes bananas when she sees people eating garinim and spitting out the shells and making piles in front of them. And Baruch Hashem, I sat with the Eidot HaMizrach people in Caesarea. They owed me. I gave a big drasha Friday night. Unfortunately, they know who I am, so I never get away free. It's okay. I owe it to Klal Yisrael. But Baruch Hashem, they honored me with garinim. No, your wife says to you, for me not to have rice on Pesach is a negation of oneg Pesach. You follow me? No, how do you react to that? But look at it the other way. For you as an Ashkenazi, someone eating rice on Pesach, oy vey, imagine you're going to go into Borough Park, into a Chassidish home where they don't eat the brachs, and you're going to open up a rice cake and you're going to say, this is the kosher of Pesach. What do you want out of me? I'm a Eidot HaMizrach. Who gives in to who? And you see, there's an even much more basic question, goes way beyond rice and Pesach. How do you daven? Look, how many of you are married to girls from Eidot HaMizrach? Are they allowed to say brachat on a mitzvah tasei shazman grama? Basic machloket rishonim, Tosfos and Rambam, the Balei Tosfos and the Chachmei Sfarad. According to the Rambam, a woman cannot say any bracha. According to Tosfot, the woman can make a bracha. I mean, I can give you shurim with the lumdus here. It's interesting, on Birchat the Torah, Rav Yehuda Grish, you can say Birchat the Torah. But on a lulav, on a netrek, on shofar, but take davening. A Sfadic girl, and let me use more correct language, a girl from Eidot HaMizrach can't daven. Can't say Baruch Shema. Can't say Yishtabach. I don't know. She can't say Yotzerah. She can't say Ava Rabba. She can say Shema. She can say Shmone Esrei. She can say Birchat HaShacha. But her whole davening has to be minuscule compared to what an Ashkenaziyah davens. And of course, reverse it. Now you take a man. All his life, he ate rice. He ate beans. He marries a girl, an Ashkenaziyah, a Chassidish girl, a Beis Yaakov girl, a Beis Rivka girl, a Beis Racha girl, a Beis Chana girl. Take your choice. And she says, how could you eat rice? It's forbidden. And she doesn't know Lamda. She doesn't know the Gemara of Pesachim. She doesn't know that Oris is 100% permissible, Me'ika Hadin. And she's all upset. And she won't feed him rice. And he's yelling and shouting, I'm the master of the house. Look at the Rambam and Hilchat Ishut. Look what Aaron Rakefet just taught us. Where's my rice? Where are my beans? Ah, then you take a different scenario. Ephraim is married, Baruch Hashem, all right, but let's say he would marry a girl from Eidot HaMizrach. And he goes to his in-laws for Pesach. And at the Seder, they're serving rice. But they're generous. They say, Ephraim, we know that you don't eat rice. You don't have to eat it. But you're eating out of the same plates, the same sakum, the same silverware. Oh my gosh, Avi, what do you say? Well, you see, it's not so simple. Shalom Bayit becomes a major issue here. And then, of course, come into the world. Let me end off now. Come into your world, the modern world. Oh boy, I don't envy you. The world of the New York Times, the world of Judea Tachronot, the world of 1,000 people posing naked on Shabbos Kaidish and Yom HaMelech. One of my grandsons, he came in from yeshiva today, so he asked me, what should we do with these people? I said, listen, all we have to do, it's nothing you can do, you just have to set a good example. But one thing I can tell you, they interviewed on the television on Shabbos, I saw it last night on the television, who knows if you're allowed to look at it, they recorded on Shabbos, but all right, let's be malamed zchud that they're all pinotet shenishbu, it's kedei sheyaseh, I don't know if that applies, that's not simple. It's a real halachic question here. But it's not, they're not mezidim there. So they interview a Taimanian and Taimani who posed naked. So they asked the Taimanim, what will they say about you in a Yemenite community? So they say, oh, they say, Anachnu Niyem Moderniyim, we became modern. I said, I would have told them, you became modern?
You went back to idol worship. Pardon me, you're pagans.
And I would quote the Gemara in Shabbos, in the Sanhedrin, that's from the Chimul Amed Beth, and from the Yodin Rayu Yisrael, the Avay Dezer Hashem, the Mamish. For lo avdu Avay Dezer, la atyula him arayit shebepahersia. That I told my grandson, you have to say, but Pamela, don't tell me you're modern. I'm modern. I live in the 22nd century. You are pagans. You're back in antiquity. You are animals. They walk naked. Humans shouldn't walk naked. Oh my gosh. So in your world, what about freedom of conscience? How do you force a woman to go your way? How does a woman force a man to go her way? Gentlemen, you're going to see all this comes up in the response literature. To reiterate, first of all, I want to thank you from the bottom of my heart for coming to Shir. It's wonderful to see a room filled with young students, our future. I hope you take the Torah and hear it Shemayim, and I hope I'm able to link you to my Rebbein, Gedolei Yisrael, and I hope you will feel the responsibility that Kefet wrote in his book, quoting himself, God created us with two ears. One ear to hear our Rebbe of 50 years ago, and one ear to hear our Talmud 50 years from now. And believe me, just as when I hear my Rebbe, I'm not ashamed. I don't want to be ashamed when I hear you 50 years from now. So what did we do today? Sorry for keeping you overtime. We dealt with Tchumim, the Rambam Hilchadishit, Rav Moshe Arachayim, and Be'ezrat Hashem, we will start next week the serious response to literature dealing with the problem. I just want to mention tomorrow is a very important share. As far as I'm concerned, it's the single most important share I will ever give. And you'll thank me with it for the next 70 years. You'll have what to answer people. The source I'm giving was already bought for $36,000 by Yoni, so put it on the IOU list. I want to also mention Tuesday night, assuming we're standing, the roads are open, people can get in and out. 7:30 at the Great Synagogue is the book launch. I wouldn't stress it so much if I were the only speaker. You can hear Rakefet, many times, it doesn't matter. But it's a very unique night because Yosef HaTzadik is speaking and Dr. Tova Lichtenstein is speaking. So it's a very, very unique night. I want to make some quick corrections. I thank Lazar Reich of Manchester, I believe it is. I mentioned Rabbi Nassan Adler. I believe I corrected this, and I said he was a grandson of Rabbi Nassan Adler, the chief rabbi of England, a grandson of the Rebbe of the Chatam Sofer. It's not a grandson, I was incorrect. It's the same name, but different families. Two, I had a slip of the tongue. I spoke about the Balmora, and evidently I said Rebbe Zechariah Halevi. Obviously, it's Rebbe Zerachia Halevi. Finally, the Minchat Yitzchak, I said when he got across Rav Kook in the 70s, I was living in Israel already, that his daughter received it. So Rabbi Reich tells me he had no daughter. So I remember the paper, it probably was his niece then. So I correct myself. Again, it has to be checked out, look into the newspapers from the 70s of that period. But I do recall that when he stood for the Eved Charedit as chief rabbi, his kanoim were opposed to him because they said he accepted Pras Rav Kook. Freebies, this is an article on Bris that appeared in Ami magazine. Why you people were not too happy with it, you'll understand it's slanted. Nevertheless, it's an interesting article. This is on Tchelet, one is in Hebrew, one is in English. It's the fascinating story of the history of Chelet the Machloket in modern times. And there's a new discovery now, which they're going to break, and I believe it is at Haifa University, that some professor has done research from what he found in Matsada, and they've come to a conclusion that what Chelet should be in modern times. And this is, if anyone is interested, this is from the Israeli Coin Society. The gifts they put out, these are about the only unique gifts you can buy in Israel that you can't get anywhere else in the world. But otherwise, it's a global village. Everything made here is available in Borough Park, in Los Angeles, in Pico Boulevard, and everything made in America is available here. But if anyone needs a unique gift to make his wife happy, believe me, you have it there. Tomorrow morning, 9 a.m., same place. There's Rapunotain Layav called. Thank you from the bottom of my heart. The Sarasota Shudra, Hamatabu, you guys. Health and happiness, Das Vadanya.